You're listening to Westside Church. For more information, visit us at westsideinfo.com.
Well, greetings, everyone. Thank you for coming out on this super hot day. It's probably the first one being this hot, and wow, it just got much hotter. Well, maybe because I'm standing here. But anyway, yeah, well, it's very good to see all of you, and I want to share my testimony with you and share my life as to how I came to Christ, and hopefully you'll enjoy it and learn something about me, what makes me tick a little bit, and then be able to apply some of it to your life, too. So I was born in 1964. Stop doing the math already. That's 50, okay? So in San Francisco, my parents were hardworking, and I had three sisters. However, most of my story is going to involve just me talking about two sisters because the third one came 14 years later. So that was a little surprise to my parents, but that was a blessing in itself. So we always had an outgoing family. We always did all the outdoor stuff, the camping, fishing, hunting, you name it, anything outdoors, sightseeing. We were always doing that. And we just had a really good time with that. And that allowed me to go into Boy Scouts, Cub Scouts, the girls into Brownies, Girl Scouts, all that stuff. So we were very active in the community and everything. And we did go to church. We were raised Catholic. My dad was a very strong Catholic, very determined Catholic. He followed the rules, basically. Even when we went on vacation, you know, we'd go on a vacation somewhere, and we know, okay, Dad's going to find a church. Let's go, you know. So we knew we were going to church no matter where we were. And but the difference was, though, that I don't believe that he had a personal relationship with Christ. I know I didn't, but I know that we were just kind of being raised that way, and that's what you did, you know. So in my growing up years, in my preteen years, I did have some events that formed my life, formed who I am today, so I wanted to share those with you. I have a little bit less time than I would normally have, so I'm going to try to cut to the chase on some of them. But our family was very much into outdoors, so we had a yearly pheasant hunting trip. We did that yearly. That included grandparents, grandfathers, uncles, my dad, all of us, and I was probably 9 years old. I was 9 years old. And so the night before, I realized I had the flu. I was like, there's no way I'm missing opening day. I'm not messing this up for nothing, right? So I masked all the symptoms and everything. I'm good. I'm not showing anything. We go out there, and we're hunting, and it's my grandfather. We put him down in the ditch because that's just his personality. He was our gun dog. Our bird dog, actually, I should say, because he's going to flush everything out. And I'm right next to him, about 15 feet away. Then it goes my dad, my other grandfather from the other side of the family, and then my uncle. So we're walking along, and, you know, the day's kind of going on. We're not really getting anything. And all of a sudden, boom, out goes a rabbit. This rabbit takes off between my grandfather and I and goes running out. My grandfather's the type, you know, I haven't had any birds today, so I'm at least going to bring home a rabbit, right? So he shoots the thing. I still don't even know if he hits it, and I don't recall anyway. And I'm walking along, and then suddenly I look down, and I've got about a quarter-sized spot of blood on my shirt. And I'm going, well, that can't be good, you know. And I'm like, there's no way I can't mess up opening day. I'm not stopping for any of this. This, I can deal with this. Let's just keep going. So I keep walking. And it's just nothing's going to get in the way of this. And so I get going a little further. I end up looking down, and now it's getting bigger. It's, you know, about this big now. And I went, I might have to say something now. I'm probably going to have to say something. So I just basically turned to my dad. I went, Dad. And you can imagine being a parent or understanding that it was pretty dramatic. So they laid me down. And I'm still not feeling the importance of it. I don't want to ruin the day. And I just remember laying on the cobbled dirt, the broken up sods of dirt, and looking across the field because my uncle's running for the car, and it's over a mile away. So he's trying to get the car, and there's a little sense of urgency, and they come bouncing back with the car and everything and put me in the back of the station wagon. It's a little Volvo station wagon that we had in those days. And I remember laying down in the back, and now we have about a 40-minute ride to Stockton. 30, 40-minute ride to Stockton to the nearest hospital. So we're cruising along, and I remember my grandfather over the back seat, over the top of me as I'm laying down back there, and I felt, I'm just feeling kind of tired. I think I want to go to sleep, you know? So I start kind of fading away, and I still remember, I can see my grandfather over the top of me yelling, "You stay with us. You do not go to sleep. You stay with us. Stay with us." I'm thinking, well, what's the big deal? I'm just feeling kind of tired, you know? I'm just not getting it, right? And so we get all the way to the hospital. I remember still urgency. I'm like, okay, you know, we go in and put me up on the table. And I remember doctors hustling around, nurses hustling around. And why is a policeman in this room? You know, and he starts asking me questions as they're doing their things. Well, he's investigating the shooting, you know, and because what had happened was two of the pellets from the shotgun, my grandfather used a 12 gauge with fairly good sized pellets because we were hunting wild bird. And they both entered about right there. And one went in, lodged up against my liver. The other one went in and bounced around and wreaked all kinds of havoc in there, stuff that shouldn't be happening, right? So I'm laying on the table, and the nurse comes up and grabs my vest. And I'm like, hey, wait a minute. That has all my casings. You know, I'm a 9-year-old kid that's walking along hunting, picking up old casings. That's where I'm at in this world, right? So I'm thinking, those are my casings, you know, just watch those, please. Don't lose those. And so some time goes by. Apparently, a lot of complications because of me having the flu at the time. And I remember waking up. I found out it was a day or two later. And I'm waking up, and I see my grandfather sitting at a chair. He's the only one in the room. Just kind of, they didn't know when I was going to wake up. And he, I look at him, but he's kind of opaque. Kind of, I can't see him clearly, right? And then I look around, and I realize I'm in an oxygen tent because of the complications when I was sick, when this all happened. And I remember my grandfather coming up to the edge of the tent, and he's crying. And he cries out to God. You know, I don't think he was a man of God, but at that time, he dropped to his knees, and he said, "Lord, please let us have this kid. Please let him live. Let him survive. And I will never grab a gun and harm any of your creation ever again." So from that time on, my grandfather never went hunting with us. I respect him for his call at that time, you know, and like I said, he wasn't a man of God, but at that time he was on his knees. So that's still kind of touching me because I still see it, you know, I mean, it's just, so that's 9 years old. So basically I make it another 10, 11 months, maybe close to a year to 10. And apparently I have sort of the same kind of pattern because we had a lake near our house. We had moved from San Francisco to Pacifica, now to Newark. And we moved into this community that we have a lake in the center of the community. It's like a mile and a half around. And so, you know, I'm 10 years old. And what's the best thing to do after getting home from school? I'm going fishing, you know. So you get in, grab the lake's just three doors down. So I grab two buddies, and we go down there, and we're going to get the big one. So we go all the way to the other side of the lake, out to this 60-foot dock that's probably about 12 feet wide, all the way out into the center of the lake. Now, the lake's only probably 20-some-odd feet deep. But, you know, so we're out there, we're fishing, but we have the attention span of a puppy, basically. So fish for probably 10, 15 minutes, and then all of a sudden we're playing. All I can recall is running up and down the dock, pretending like we had fish on, right? And I'm running, and then I turn back forward, and I look. Dock's gone. Yeah, I'm off the end of the dock, and it's fall. I'm wearing a good-sized down jacket, pants, boots, all that stuff. And I had taken swimming lessons, you know, and I basically knew how to stay up top, but I had never been thrown in like this, right? So I go in and I go down and I realize, holy smokes, I can't get to the top. And I'm fighting to get to the top. I finally get to the top and I realize I still got 5 more feet to go because I can see the end of the dock and my friends are out there reaching. And I'm kicking, I'm spending all my energy. Part of it's panicking too, but, you know, I'm doing everything I can to get there. I get to within a few inches of one of their hands and I just can't close that gap. I'm flailing and trying to get there. And then finally I get that little bit. And my friend goes, "Aha." They just thought we were playing still. So I went down again. And I finally worked myself up to come back up. And boom, I hit the bottom of the dock. I just bang. Oh, wow, that must be dock. And there's no air pocket. It's a solid bottom sitting right on the water with flotation underneath it. And I went, okay, I've got to get to the side. I'm panicking, but I'm still thinking, right? So I got to get to the side. So I start dropping again, and I kick over to the side, and bonk, hit the dock again. Man, I must not have gone far enough. Go down, go back down, come back up again, bonk, hit the dock. Apparently, I'm not going this way. I'm going this way. So I'm in trouble. I'm done. I'm spent. I've exhausted everything that was there and beyond, and I just start sinking. And I tell you, I sank really fast with all those clothes on. I still remember to this day my feet going into the mud and my just about to my ankles, just that right down into the mud. And it was so peaceful and calm. I was done flailing, and then all of a sudden, I felt someone pull me up from behind. Pulled me up, got me back up onto the dock. Turns out there was a fisherman probably 500 feet away that watched and said, "It's fall. It doesn't look right for that kid to be swimming, right?" And then when I disappeared and went under and then didn't come back up, he knew something was wrong. So God put that man in my life right then, because he gave him the skills, the ability, because this is murky water. You basically put your hand in, you can't see your hand anymore. You know, it's that dark and murky. So those were two events that I probably drove my parents crazy. But so God had a plan for me. I apparently wasn't done with what he had for me. So I thank him for that. I just didn't have the ability then or the knowledge to know that how much he was working in my life at that time. I was just a kid going through my world, right? I was becoming more and more self-reliant and doing that. So I made it to high school without any significant events, and that was good. I was still going to church. However, like I said, I was becoming more and more self-reliant and not realizing my need for him. You know, I was developing the attitude, basically, if you want to get it done, you get it done. You work harder, you get it done. You don't need anything else. You know, just you. And that just wasn't right. But we'll get to that. Like I said, I got a lot of my work ethic from my dad. He's a very strong worker. He would work all year for, "We're going to take that vacation. We're going to take that vacation." So everything was about that vacation. Then after about 10, 20 years, it started to be, "I'm doing everything for retirement. I'm going to get there, we're going to get there, and then we're going to party," right? And that's going to be it. So speaking of vacations, we always like to go fishing. So we always had these trips that we'd go, and we'd take our old Volvo station wagon, we'd go way back in the mountains, and there was this, we'd just pick a spot on a map, the Forest Service maps. "Let's go to this lake, let's go to this lake," you know, and do that. And then we got to this one, and we'd traveled a couple hours to get there, and then it said, "Four-wheel drive, next mile only." And we're like, "Oh, well, we can still try." Well, it was really four-wheel drive, next mile. It wasn't Volvo quality road. So that kind of planted the seed for the Jeep. So then my dad got the Jeep, so then we can have something to do that. That's the Jeep I still have now. And so now, that was when I was 15. So now 16, now the big event. That's, you know, a guy getting his license. That's everything to me at that time. That's all I was caring about and everything. So within a couple days of getting my license, a friend of mine, I was the oldest of the group, a friend of mine says, not the same one that pulled his hand back, a friend of mine says, he's got a girlfriend down at these stables, and he would like me to give her a ride. And by the way, there's also a lot of girls there. Girls like horses, right? So I'm thinking, okay, that could be mutually beneficial. So we go down there, he meets his girlfriend, I'm just hanging out, and I'm looking around, and I see this girl over there, blonde over there, and she's more than ankle deep in horse manure, mud, consisting of you name it. And she's digging away, and I said, "Well, who's that over there?" And they go, "Oh, that's Deb." Deb, my future wife. So I met her within a couple days of getting my license. And we actually, we were friends for a couple of years in a group setting and just, you know, developed relationships like that. And had a good time as a group, and then after a couple of years, we decided to start dating exclusively. So now I'll move on. I started working for Budget Rent-A-Car. Now, I got to tell you, you cannot give the keys to a Corvette or a Camaro to a 16-year-old boy. Okay, there's just no way that that's even right. But I did. No one got injured. No injuries whatsoever. There might have been some property damage here and there, but I just want to say, if you ended up buying a used car from Budget during those years, I apologize. That would be the early 80s if you need to check it. I graduated high school, but now my dad says, okay, you're an adult. You can decide whether or not you want to go to church. I've given you the foundation, and you can make the decision from here. And I was just so self-absorbed that I believed I had all the answers. I knew what I needed. I didn't need God or anything. I knew I could do whatever I needed to do on my own strength. And so I started weaning myself off of church. I'd show up every other week and then every once a month. And eventually I just stopped going altogether. I didn't realize how much God had done for me already at that time and how much more he could do for me. So move forward a few years. In 1984, I ended up coming up this way, and I went to the Rubicon, and I was passing through Placerville area. It's like, I want to live here someday. I think that's a pretty cool place, you know? And so developing my plan for what I wanted to do. Went to college. College just reaffirmed all of my belief in myself. It didn't do anything to secure anything for faith at all. And so Deb and I, at this point, we'd been dating for 8 years. But we were sort of at a crossroads, too, because we realized we had met so early. She was 15 when I met her, and I was 16. And we just didn't know if that was, if there was something else for us or what we wanted to do in life even. We didn't want to just jump onto that. So Deb's parents were divorced when she was younger, and her dad had moved to Florida. And so her dad was opening a business and presented her with an opportunity to help start a business out there. So we made the decision to have her go ahead and move back to Florida and that we'd start seeing other people, because if it was right, it was going to work out. And it was tough at times, tough for both of us, I would say, probably more for me, though, but, you know, that's how it is. And so then I graduated from college, got my 4-year degree in business, and woo, okay, then now what? Well, I couldn't find a job. When I was working for Budget, I was out there washing cars when I was in high school. So I finally find a job with a degree. Now I'm washing big rigs. I'm washing 53-foot trailers and going, wow, this is just ironic. I spend all that time getting my schooling, but I was doing it because of the management that I could move into, you know, the carrot that they dangle in front of you. You could move into that job. Do this first, right? So I did all that and worked there for a year or two. Finally, an opening came up for an operations manager, and I took that, and that was a good experience. Good experiences aren't always favorable, but it's good experience, right? So, I mean, I worked my butt off. I was working 12 to 14-hour days, taking my work home with me, responsible for employees and the whole operations. We probably had about 1,000 trailers out all over the countryside. So that meant also I'm on call during the night. So if anything breaks down or anything, I'd get this call at 2 in the morning, and the guys in who knows where couldn't even tell you the name of the place, right? So I had a stack of phone books that I'd have to look up, you know, vendor services and that kind of stuff. For some of you younger people, this is before internet. You couldn't just hit a button. You actually had to figure out on, you know, and use directory services and stuff like that. So I was being worked into the ground, and then I was looking, okay, well, where would I go from here? So I looked at my next boss, who was now the boss of regional offices, and he always presented, if you're lucky, you can have my spot. I looked at him. He's tore up. He went through the same route I did. I said, if I'm lucky, I can have your spot? I don't think so, because I also looked at what he was being paid, and I was like, no, I don't think so. So my dad is watching all this from the side, and he sees me being run into the ground, because I even started developing little facial tics. You know, all of a sudden I'd be talking to somebody, and my eye would start twitching. What is that? You know, and then my gut would start burning, and I'm like, holy smokes, I think I've got an ulcer going. And it was, you can't operate on 2 hours sleep, and I've gotten a little better. Anyway, so my dad made me aware of law enforcement. I always did have an interest. My dad was the chief deputy in San Francisco. That's basically the highest position you can get without being elected. So he was there, and I applied and got through. And throughout all this time, I'm keeping in contact with Deb. Like I said, we're dating others, but it's just no one's ever really measuring up, you know, because they're just not, right? And But my walk with God hadn't gotten any better, because now I'm in law enforcement, and I'm seeing things that really people shouldn't see. But yeah, I'm seeing things, and I'm realizing, how can there be a God if that exists or that exists? You know, and what I'm doing is I'm making excuses and putting up obstacles between God and I. And but he was still there, because I can also tell you there's a lot of things that he protected me at in there without getting any specifics. I was there for 5 years in San Francisco, so you can only imagine the big city. And so after a couple of years of Deb away, we start talking about marriage. And, you know, because if she comes back, this is for real, then this is what we're going to do. And she also let me know that she started going to church out there, going to a Calvary Chapel out there in Florida, in Fort Lauderdale. And I thought, well, good for her. I don't really need that, but okay, good for you. I'm not going to get in the way of that, right? Then right before coming back, she tells me that she gave her heart to the Lord. And I was like, wow, okay, cool. Because then we were talking about it. I could feel her excitement. I understood all that, and it just wasn't clicking for me, though. I'm just like, okay, you know, I support you. We'll do all of that, you know. And so she came back, and we got married in 93. We immediately bought a house in Livermore. We started going to a startup church in Pleasanton. And that was good, because this startup was, I was able to build some relationships and start to understand really what was happening around, and she was having a really good time at it, you know, and I was just always kind of soaking it in, watching, and I wanted to support her. And so I started getting the picture, and to kind of get in there a little bit is now Deb's seeing the fun I'm having in law enforcement. She said, well, I want to do law enforcement too. I'm like, oh, no, we're not having two of us exposed to this craziness out here. And I even had her come to work. I worked the nights in the jails in San Francisco. I worked intake, so I did that for 5 years. And in the daytimes, I'd go out and do warrant service. So I had her come to work and show her the craziness, and she's like, okay, yeah, I don't want that. But she did want CHP, and I had a lot of contacts in San Francisco and CHP, and start looking at it, and I did some ride-alongs with them just to go, can I see her doing this? Can I see me doing this? I like cars. I like driving fast. Remember my budget days and all that? It's like doing that. So then, so we made the decision for both of us to do it at the same time. We knew we'd probably have to go move to LA and do that, and we would just not sell our house here. We'd just have an apartment down there and travel back and forth on our days off. And I went right into the academy, because coming from another agency, she was a year behind me because she had radial keratotomy. The vision had to be a certain amount. So she had radial keratotomy to correct her vision. And so that put her a year behind me, which was another blessing, because the two of us going through that craziness at the same time wasn't going to work out. So I was thinking, oh, am I getting LA? And out of the academy, I get beautiful downtown Oakland. And I'm like, I enjoy that, because I came from San Francisco, so it's just that much closer. I don't have to cross the bridge, but I enjoy that energy, that fun. But a part of me is like, holy smokes, I don't want my wife working in Oakland. You know, please, you know, if there was ever a first prayer I made without me knowing it, it was that one. So Deb went to the academy and got out, and that prayer was answered. And that she got Dublin, which is right there in Livermore, basically, right by home, nice community and everything. And I just got to tell you, that was a blessing right there. So then we moved to Tracy further out, you know, because our goal is to get up here. We wanted to get up here. We could have some land, some horses, you know. And so we moved to Tracy. And then we have our daughters, Miranda and Carly. And we were blessed by them. But when we moved away from that church where I was starting to make connections. I was starting to feel plugged in and understanding what was going on. So we're back on the church hunt. And we're going around, and I kind of have her pre-screening them because she knows my tolerance level. So she'll go to it, and then she'll just go, oh, no, that's not going to work for him. So then, so we actually got in with another startup, and it was good. But you know what? The startup wasn't where I needed to be, because they were consumed with trying to start up. You know, not having to worry about carry someone or, you know, take care of them and take care of this baby Christian. And so they were just more involved in the process. So we're still bouncing around looking. In this time, my dad retires, and he's following his dream. He comes up. He moved up to the hills, Cameron Park. That's his version of the hills, but that's because he's coming from the Bay Area, so that's hills. Okay, that's nice. Nothing wrong with Cameron Park. I'm just making it. And so he moves up here and with my mom. My sisters have all moved out. My dad gets sick within 2 years. And just 2 months later, he passes away. So that left my mom up here alone. So we'd kind of had a 10-year plan to get up here, and we're at 4.5, 5 years now. All right, we got to go up there to be with mom. But again, we were blessed because now I'm in the CHP, both of us are, and we can transfer. So I was able to transfer to South Sac, another fun place. And then Deb didn't have the seniority to get to South Sac. She was able to get into an office job where they were developing something new called the Amber Alert. So she was in on the ground floor on starting up the Amber Alert. So the kids are starting to grow up, and I knew enough about Christ. I knew that I was missing something. It just wasn't clicking with me yet. I just didn't have enough for me to take that step forward, scared, whatever, I don't know. I knew I wanted my kids to have more, though. I knew I wanted them to have a relationship with Christ. So we decided to go ahead and enroll Miranda in a Christian preschool. And that preschool met right here, right in this corner. This was Placerville Christian School. So we'd come down the hallway, you'd enter on that door, and you'd come down the hallway, and this was their classroom, this little corner right here. And so we did that for preschool. Okay? Then the next year was kindergarten, and now that's over towards C5. So we go over there, and Miranda's in there, and she has a new classmate, Olivia. So we get to know Pam and Joe, and we're still doing the church hunt. We're bouncing all over the place, and, at that time, I was kind of liking some of the bigger churches because you can go in and jump out, and nobody would know your name, and you can just ditch, right? And it's no big deal. But so Deb's getting kind of frustrated. I'm actually kind of frustrated because nothing's really clicking, and I know something's missing. So Pam actually invited us to Westside to try her church on B Street. I don't remember if you went first or not. Yeah, you did go first. I was still chicken. Okay, so Deb goes first and says, okay, probably Craig can probably handle this. And I come in there, and immediately I just felt God's presence through the love of the people in there, the overwhelming just greeting that I felt, the pure love of Christ. And I knew right away it was different. I said, I think we found our church home. I knew right away, you know. So eventually that led to dinner with Steve and Terry. And Steve, you know, sitting there, and he goes, so, Craig, where are you in your walk? I went, whoa, hot seat. It's almost as hot as right here. And I said, you know, I'm just not there yet. I don't have any other answer than that. I'm just not feeling it yet. And it was honest, and they accepted it, and we just went on through, and we got to know Pam and Joe more. We got to know a lot of the families that are here in the church, a lot of the guys. I started to realize that these are people that are doing life struggles, dealing with the same issues in life, but they're doing it with a focus on God, you know? And I said, I can do that. I think I can do that. I mean, I don't have all the answers, but so in Easter of 06, Steve was preaching, and he gave an altar call at the end of the service. You know, anyone want to commit their lives to Christ? And I was like, yeah, let's go. Let's do this, right? I didn't have the answers. I just had to step out in faith and do it. Deb looked at me like, are you kidding? And I was like, so newsflash, I don't communicate very well. I'm a typical guy. All right. So she had no idea this was coming. She admitted later that her reaction was like, what took you so long? But I do everything slow, okay? Because we didn't get married till I was 28, 29 years old. So I do everything slow, right? But immediately God gave me peace. And I just felt that peace when when I decided to let go of the reins and let him take over. And that's been an awesome time since. And it's just been a continuing sanctification process where, you know, I'm just trying to focus on him. I slip. I go all different directions, but he extends his grace to me. And that's really, I'm so thankful for that, because I've been pulled off track so many times, but he's always there. And a lot of the things I used to do was, he always harped on me, talked to me about my worry. I always worried about things. I always like, oh no, that could fall and this could happen and that. She's like, what? That's, you know, so I was always worrying about stuff. So one of the first verses that applied to my life was Matthew 6:27. Who of you by worrying can add a single hour to your life? You know, I just felt that. That met me right where I was at. And I'm like, yeah, I need to let go. I need to let go and give it to God. He's also been teaching me how to be an effective tool for him, to be his witness. All right, because I'm not the kind of guy that's going to sit up here and cite Bible verses to you. I just have no memory when it comes to that, you know, and I'm not just going to do that. But I can be an effective witness for him. You know, I can try to live my life in the way that he wants me to, that can aim for him. But to do that, I also have to realize that I got to get myself out of the way. Okay, get my personal preferences out of the way. We actually be willing to go ahead and stand in front of all of you right now. Have me get out of the way, right? It's not something I would choose to do per se, but I'm doing it. And but I am totally thankful, though. Let me make that point. I've got to set aside my preferences for the good of the kingdom. It can be uncomfortable, but be confident, get out of the way, and let his will be done. He has also helped me at work also. Because I deal with people. I don't always deal with people in the best of environments. I mean, it is CHP. We do a lot of other things that you wouldn't suspect. So we deal with all people in kind of different situations. And a lot of times you can develop a negative view of people. And I really had to let go of that, because I've got to realize that we're all broken. We're all God's children, and I'm no different than anybody else, you know. And one of the tools that I use for that to help me is Ephesians 4:31-32, when Paul writes, get rid of all bitterness, rage and anger, brawling and slander, along with every form of malice. Be kind and compassionate to one another, forgiving each other just as Christ forgave you. So one of the simple little terms that I've used to help me deal with something when someone really bothers me a lot with their actions is hate the sin but love the sinner. And that has really helped me a lot at work. And then I'm getting towards the end here, but another way that he's teaching me is through Steve's teaching. And Steve had this one preach, I don't know, a couple of months ago, and it just hit me. And it was, forgive those who offend you and make yourself less offendable. Basically, get over yourself. You're not that big a deal, right? That's what I tell myself. I'm not telling you that. But that's just so much better if you just go around and you can be just less offendable. Yeah. It's just not worth it. God gave us grace, and it would not be fair to not extend that to others. And because I'm totally thankful for his grace, and I want to be a grace extender to others. So if we can have the worship team start coming up. And I just have one final thought as I conclude here. I'm just an ordinary guy, but God can use ordinary people to do extraordinary things. We just got to get out of the way and let him do it. And the reason we do all of that is just so he gets the glory. Let him use us as his tool so he gets the glory. Thank you for listening to my story. I appreciate it. Thank you.
Thank you, Craig.